So, just a real quick kind of touch point of, I know last time we talked about through session three, we talked about like conflict resolution and whatnot, which as Jordan described, you know, all of that is like not intended. It's the fire alarm plan. It's so you know what to do when things happen, but it's not intended to be that's your every week. But before we launch into session four and advancing the gospel together, did want to just pause and ask if y'all had any follow-up questions from the conflict resolution, how do we navigate that type stuff? Anything that came to mind for you during the week? Yeah, that's fine. I had nothing specific in mind, but just want to make sure to make room for it. All right, if we want to just open up to Hebrews 13, I just want to make a pit stop in the scriptures before we get into advancing the gospel, because I think Hebrews 13 helps us with some of the tension we experience in community groups. So we're just Hebrews 13. Could somebody read verses 1 through 2? Cool. Thank you. Cool. Thank you. I'm not going to talk anything about the angels part, so just go figure it out on your own. Here he is at the end of Hebrews, like a lot of the letters of the New Testament. The author of Hebrews is just in the, like, here are some directions, right? He's just giving commands and encouraging. And this is really similar to something that we read in Romans 12, when it talks about showing hospitality. When it talks about serving one another with our gifts. But I love just how succinct this is. And disclaimer, I don't think in a community group environment, like if you start trying to talk about the original languages, like everybody's eyes are gonna glaze over. So if your eyes glaze over right now, it's perfectly fine. I've been there before. This is the kind of thing that you might not necessarily do in a community group environment, but we can nerd out about this for just a minute because I think it's really cool. Or at least I can do the nerding. So you'll see in that passage, let brotherly love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. Each of these is one word in the Greek. Okay, so brotherly love, the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. Philadelphia is love of brothers. Okay, that's just brotherly love. It's the sort of familial love we experience, whether in our actual family and when we're in our adoptive family, the church. But then show hospitality to strangers is also one word. Philoxenias. You see in here the same thing that we get xenophobia from strangers. Like fear of strangers is xenophobia. And I just love that these two things are put beside one another. But if you look at the words he uses, let brotherly love continue. That's the kind of thing that we already have. He's saying, just let it keep on going. You already have it and you're already living according to it. Yeah, let it continue. However, the thing that might slip your attention, the thing that we all might be prone to neglect, is the love of strangers. And I think that these two things are incredibly helpful when we're talking about community groups, particularly when we're talking about how we advance the gospel, because in community groups, if there's anything that our community groups will struggle with, okay, and you maybe even experienced this in your own group, mine does too, is that the sort of inward-facing brotherly love, that just happens, especially when we're fulfilling what we talked about last week, when we're doing our life together, that sort of thing. When, as you build experience with one another, as you go through life, you go through life's celebrations and tragedies, all of that. That's going to happen, and that's something that if our attention is not equally to the way that we welcome others, the way that we love the communities that God has placed us in, etc., then I think that we're actually not fulfilling the commission that Jesus has given us to go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations. And again, that sort of like, I think that attention is really helpful because the brotherly love is so natural and it is so fun and good and can get really comfortable. Then I think part of the reason that the author of Hebrews is pointing our attention to, hey, make sure that you don't neglect this, is that as time goes on, you actually have more and more reasons to neglect it, to have your attention elsewhere, to have this really comfortable environment where you're like, actually, I don't know if I want anyone else in here. I don't know if I want to try to reach our neighborhood, try to like be praying for our coworkers, anything like that, because this is just so nice and good. And again, like he says, let brotherly love continue. It is a good thing. But I think that's just helpful in making sure that our attention is on those two sorts of places. This is not a question in terms of like, hey, let's just talk about groups that have gotten it wrong before. But like my group has struggled with this, particularly when it comes to things like inside jokes or like that trip we went on last year that we want to tell stories from. It's like just for constantly, like if somebody's new in the group, we're like, hey, this is what we're talking about. Like we're, you know, just having to explain stuff. Like that's part of what we're talking about. So again, not to just like rag on groups you've been a part of or you are a part of currently, but just how have you seen that sort of insular, inward-facing effect happen in your groups? And or how have you seen your own group or how have you fought that? You can start with, like, how have you seen it? Water.
I think it's hard to bring people into, like, it's like a social thing, and then there'll be like maybe a couple of the guys are hanging out, and it's that's kind of like, you know, a lot of times it's like the same, the guys that were like good friends, and maybe a new guy in the group, they don't even think to like bring like a, the new guy in. Like, that's hard. Similarities in the middle, there's always going to be a few on the edges, like age or marital status, but
Anything you've seen in groups where you've kind of successfully, you were just mentioning, Kaylee, that sort of being intentional about maybe even on a demographic level, but anything else that you've seen in groups you've been a part of or are a part of in fighting that? Sure. Yeah.
I think it does help when different people within the group are planning activities.
So yes.
It's not always just the leaders asking to come over to something. Breaking up sort of the regular routine with doing something a little bit different that might draw some other people up and maybe wouldn't initially come to something.
I think talking about it. People have had babies and have not been able to always come. So, or a spouse will take turns, the spouse as well coming. And then Sean was what can we do about this? Make sure everyone's included. I think that goes for a lot of different examples too, of just talking about it and open.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe varying the types of activities or what time you do it. I've had groups that kind of are just every, once a month we're gonna go eat dinner and that's all all the extracurricular activities we're gonna do as a group or whatnot. But I think it's there's some things that maybe somebody that might feel more comfortable. We had a couple in our group, they did have a baby and so they started inviting people over for brunch. Saturdays so just thinking of different ways where it's maybe they don't feel comfortable bringing the baby out in the public, but I could have them over to my home, for example, a brunch,
Yeah, a little bit of what we talked about last week, you can kind of think of there's this relational network or matrix in your group that any time that you spend with other people in group or that other people in group spend with one another is going to feed into the relational life of your group. Part of what we're talking about right now is not merely how do you be a welcoming space and be on mission, but also part of what's coming up is how do we make sure that everybody is involved, maybe even in the line of people who have kids or something like that. And I think that those actually overlap because again, if you do those sorts of there are different events going on that some people can come to, maybe not everybody can come to every type of thing, but if you do multiple types of things that relatively capture everybody, then you are increasing that sort of relational contact between everybody in the group. But that also means that at all of those sorts of various events that there's likely another audience of people who would come to those things. There is your friend or your neighbor or a coworker or someone who might come to a brunch, who might not come to something else. I think it is, those sorts of social things are less intimidating to invite somebody to than your Wednesday night gathering. But I do think John's point is really important in that how is it that we conceive of those times together? Is this, hey, I'm just grabbing beers with the guys in group who we're close with, we're going to be sharing about our life and stuff. Would even inviting a stranger inhibit that sort of community? And then also, is that the only type of thing that we plan? Is the only thing that we're planning is us going deep together or going camping together or something like that. And so back to just this balance that I think even as we're thinking through how do we enrich that sort of relational matrix, how do we enrich the overall relational life of our group, that provides a lot of opportunities for us to be a welcoming space, provided we're giving it sufficient attention. And again, I think it's a little bit of a mix that we're doing there. And part of the reason I cover this in community groups is back to the language of the leader role description, is that I like to communicate for leaders that you are intended to be the champion of how do we know the gospel together, live the gospel together, advance the gospel together, which is to say that you don't have to do everything. So just like we talked about last week, when it comes to social things or whatnot, I love it when like it's not you planning everything, but you have other people in group planning stuff, when there's just a permissive atmosphere for people who are like, hey, I'm going to the movies, anybody want to come with me, type of thing. You don't have to fulfill all the responsibilities of how are we going to do this shared life thing together. Similarly, you don't have to lead discussion every single week for forever. Actually, giving other people opportunities to lead discussion is a great way to train up leaders, which is we'll talk about in just a minute. So when it comes to advance, I think that's another area that you don't have to do everything. You don't have to plan if we're going to try and serve as a group, or like do, you know, neighborhood outreach or anything like that. You don't have to plan everything. However, again, part of the reason we cover this in leadership training is I think if us as leaders, if our eyes aren't on this, likely our group's eyes will not be on it. This is the one thing where, because of all that sort of tendency and direction that groups tend to take themselves into, that reading the scriptures together, I think that you'll have support behind that. Doing the shared life together, I think you'll have support behind that. When it comes to being on mission together, I think that, again, you'll have support behind it, but I think that that's the thing that might slip everybody's attention. So just an encouragement to you as leaders to lead, not out of doing it all, but to have our attention in achieving this balance. Any questions about that before we move on? Cool. We'll get into some specifics about that championing stuff in just a minute. Let's talk about Missional Church by Keller. What stood out to you? What did you learn? What felt important?
About the language we use a lot.
Yeah. Yep. I always point that out because it just is mind-blowing to me how old that document is and how relevant it is. Which, part of the reason we discuss this in community leader training is because that document, it's used in the elder championing process, and it's pretty foundational to, like, it's from what I understand, was pretty informative, because Vintage got planted in 2002. Pretty informative for like how we wanted to initially and how we still want to go about church ministry. So this is, yeah, definitely pretty bread and butter around here.
You talked about retelling culture stories, reframing them with the gospel, you know, entering into those stories, knowing them, but also retelling them. Mm-hmm. And I've heard Keller describe it kind of even more simply than that, just like it's kind of yes, no, yes framework of like you kind of affirm the positives of what, I don't know, what somebody's searching for, what they're trying to explain, and then you kind of know, like, this is where it's maybe a little off, and then you kind of correct it, like, through the gospel. So it's like a very gentle way to, I don't know, just walk alongside people in the midst of just the deep questions that they're asking. But like it sounded like the appreciating like current art and culture, and what I think about is like the movies and TV shows people are talking about, because they have, you know, like kind of stating what you said, but like a lot of them speak to like deeper themes and search for meaning and stuff like that, so you can take that and like shift it towards the gospel, but you have to like not just view every prestige TV show is like evil, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to like open your mind, be willing to engage in that culture, not just be super cynical and be like, this stuff is, you know, not that anybody probably thinks that, but
I use the phrase like common grace.
Yeah. Common grace. Okay. I think I'm speaking to myself a little bit more here, because I'm tired of how many shows there are.
So why do I have to watch so many shows? Yeah. Any questions it left you with, or any pushback, or anything like usually at this stage, if there are questions, it's like, but how do you do this? Like, this all sounds great, you know, especially at Vintage, like, because this is pretty in line with our ethos, like, things that we are really passionate about, then, yeah, it's like, this makes sense, but, yeah, what are the practicals? Which I think, Tyler, what you were just talking about, super helpful for, I think, one of the most nebulous things in that article that he wrote is the like retelling the culture stories, like how do you do that, but part of it, the first yes stage is you need to know it well enough to not dismiss it, and I think that that's a concept that very much governs, well, how do we in any respect try to be outwardly facing as Christians, is that you don't need to know everything and you don't need to watch every TV show. But there is a sense to which we have to be participants in the society that exists around us and that we live in, that we are actually a part of. We have to be participants enough to be able to discuss whether that's art or whether that's politics or whether, like, whatever. And I think that our neighbors and coworkers can pick up on that pretty well, whether we're just like, you know, firing shots from the sidelines, or if we're actually like participating, we're actually in this with them. I think that people could pick up on that really well. And if there's anything that caricaturizes, like, the church, particularly white evangelical Southern Christians, it is the we are a community unto ourselves, and we're just here to, like, be angry about things. I think in if you're imagining this is like this conversation that you might be in with somebody, you know, there is a sense to which merely knowing what they're talking about gains you some audience, and having thoughts about it, and especially, you know, it's something like a TV show or like sports is a really easy example, like that. Hey, we are humans. And we are a part of the same society. And there's a sense to which I, rather than trying to be cool, like, oh, I can talk the lingo or something, what's your favorite IPA? As opposed to that, is far more of, no, we're just both on the same level. And what I think about Jesus, I think is relevant to you, but that's not at the exclusion of other things. Okay, that like we have something shared in common. So, anyways, so I think that sort of yes, no, yes, understand it well enough to know what you can affirm, understand it well enough to know this is actually what isn't in alignment with the gospel, which also requires understanding the gospel well enough, and then being able to articulate well how is it that Jesus fulfills this? So let's say like. Career aspirations is a big one in the triangle. When, you know, like, man, just chasing the dream. Like, well, okay, you know, there is, like, we are called to work. We can have a good theology about work. And many people in the triangle do many important things that people need, you know, whether that's in, like, the tech industry or whether that's in nonprofits or whatever that is. Like, yes to those things. However, when it comes to things like identity, man, how many times do you describe yourself as busy? How many times when you're introducing yourself to somebody, do you hope that when you drop, hey, this is my position, that they are like in awe of you in any way or anything like that? What is it about your identity that you're trying to get out of this? And what is it that in the gospel we can affirm that no, our identity is actually made whole only in Jesus? So, yeah, keep doing important work, but man, it cannot satisfy your soul. Only Jesus can. And that's where you'll find rest for your soul. That's the same sort of pattern that we can do with basically anything. You'll notice in the training notes on page 21, look for gospel opportunities. I believe in the house chapter that y'all read, he talked about bridges. So same idea is that what you're looking for is, whether that's in conversation with somebody about a TV show or something like that, looking for, well, how does this connect to, like, how does this relate to Jesus, and how does Jesus fulfill what people are looking for? How does Jesus actually bring life where these other things do not, etc.? And sometimes when we talk about that, it can sound like what you're going to do is you're going to Jesus juke people, that you're going to be talking about whatever that game was, and it's like, man, that team got to a victory. Well, let me tell you about victory in Jesus, right? Like, that is not doing it well. I don't think it's doing it well at all. Yeah. But I do think even when people are talking about, like, whatever the, you know, recent show or whatever that is, I think that generally speaking, there is a deeper subtext to conversations that we have more access to than you might realize. And largely that just comes from asking good questions, you know? Because it's not merely like, okay, well, how do I make Breaking Bad relate to the gospel? Because that's going to be tricky. Well, maybe not. We're all broken in need of a savior. But maybe not all making meth. So you're not necessarily just finding this, like, leaping off point per se. But I do think thoughtful questions as you engage with people, like, hey, what, like, you just came on staff here at this job I work at, whatever, like, what do you want to do with your life? I think that people really appreciate, like, maybe not, you know, the first time you ever meet somebody. Like, there's a way that you can do it where it comes off as creepy. But I think that if we genuinely care about people, and if we genuinely want to build relationships with other people, that those sorts of just deeper, more meaningful questions can actually lead to a lot of relational fruit and also gospel opportunities. And I think it's before we keep on going with gospel opportunities, it's just good to like pit stop in, are we perceiving of relationships with other peoples as projects? Hey, the only thing I'm trying to do here is get you saved. And then that's a check in my box, or I get points in heaven or whatever. And that's not what we're talking about. Because I think that if you don't genuinely love people, kind of like in the participation sphere, if you aren't actually participating, you can't actually talk about it. I think if you don't actually love your neighbor as yourself, that when it comes to evangelism, you will do it poorly. And I think that's why non-Christians might have a negative perspective of evangelistic efforts, is because on the whole, churches have done it in an unloving character. So I think that we actually have to love our people and not treat them as projects, and not make our love for them contingent upon whether or not they're going to accept Jesus as their Lord and Savior. So anyways, gospel opportunities in this paragraph, you'll see, I think it's always gospel truth, gospel work. We can just never separate the two. Okay, there's a lot of arguments about that. Some people are like, well, you know, I don't really care if you're putting a sandwich in somebody's hand. If you're not telling them the gospel, then, you know, they're still, like, their soul is still in desperate need. We just got to do both. We just got to do both. And I don't think that we need to necessarily be waging some large argument, because I don't think that we need to pick. And I don't think that it actually behooves us to be like, well, which one is more important? They're both important. And so we should do both. That is to say that I think they should always go in tandem. And if we feel any sort of inclination from like a comfort standpoint, it's going to be towards gospel work, things like service and whatnot. And people love Francis Assisi when, you know, the quote, preach the gospel always, and if necessary, use words. People love that stuff. And they're like picking up trash on the side of the road and like, yes, we should pick up trash. But I do not think that the average non-Christian driving past you will be like, I wonder what it, like, the reason for the hope that is within them when they see you picking up trash. Like, I don't think that that's particularly in a post-Christian, de-churched sort of society. People aren't going to make those conclusions on their own. That's why there has to be a gospel proclamation. Okay, but there is some sort of knowledge that people need to receive to be able to accept Jesus. So, anyways, that's my one soapbox there. And then, so you're always looking for those two opportunities, and we'll get into just a minute, well, how do you do this sort of gospel work in group? And I think we can think of it towards, within two different buckets, okay? There's group gathering and group scattered. There's your group when you're all together, whether that's in group on Wednesday night, or that's, you know, when you're out, if you're out, like, doing something, you know, going out to eat or something like that. When you have everybody together, is the smallest percentage of time that you like compared to what everybody else is using their time on. The majority of their time is when we're not together, when they're scattered out into where they live, where they work, where they spend their time, Triangle Rock Club, like whatever. So I think we have to think in those two buckets, because ideally, you know, we like I talk to groups a lot of time about like serving together as a group, like that. That's great in an idealistic standpoint, but you're going to be meeting on Wednesday nights to do Bible study more often than you're even doing that. So that's just this really low percentage of your time together. So in terms of groups scattered, I think that's actually something that's beneficial for us to give our attention to. And the way that you can be engaged with one another when everybody's in all their own places is by having an ongoing conversation about your loved ones. We use that language at Vintage to talk about one person who you are intentionally pursuing in a relational capacity for the sake of them coming to know Jesus as their Savior. And again, everything that I just said, that's not to make them a project. However, that is to say, like, this is somebody that I know is not right with God. I know that they need Jesus, and that I have some relational access to them that maybe other people don't or something. And so I'm praying for them that they would come to know the Lord. I'm looking for opportunities to share the gospel with them. That's not the only thing I'm doing with them, but this is my one person. There are something like a million non-Christians in the triangle. If we try to reach all of them, all of us are just going to be anxious all the time. So part of the reason we talk about loved one is like, man, what does faithfulness look like? And I think faithfulness, just at minimum, is like, man, I just got one person. And I'm going to love and trust the Lord that he might save this person, and I'm going to give my attention there until he calls me elsewhere. Okay. And what that ongoing conversation can look like, we talked at the end of last time about ways that you can open up group that actually have people engaging with one another, whether that's like telling stories from your week or the actually good icebreaker question, anything like that. And one of them is, and I don't think you have to do this necessarily every time. You could do it, you know, once a month, once every other month, something like that. But like, hey guys, can we just get an update? Like, how's everybody doing with your loved one? Like, how's that relationship going? And once you do that once or twice, then the conversation translates into, man, how are things going with your neighbor? Because you know, like I know who all our loved ones are. And so we can have conversations about it, both in those check-ins, but also afterwards. So like when we're like, you know, it's prayer time, we didn't open up group with the loved one conversation, but we're gonna pray for one another. Now all of a sudden when Harrison is like, yeah, I get lunch with Francisco tomorrow. Now all of a sudden I'm like, man, I know he's your loved one and we've met him. I really want him to come to know Jesus. So I can pray for your lunch and I can pray for him that he might come. That's how we can support one another in our loved one stuff. So it's not merely like, is there a healthy sort of accountability aspect to it? And like a, hey, we're talking about it. And if somebody does not have a loved one, like maybe it does lead them to say, gosh, yeah, Jesus has already put me in this person's life. Yeah, why don't I just start praying for them? But that is not the primary goal, I don't think. The primary goal is, what's up, Eddie?
Hey,
how's it going?
Hey.
We got pizza back there.
Sweet.
Yeah. Primary goal is not to just get everybody to do it. That's not the goal. But the goal is, well, I think we can be praying for one another, supporting one another, and that the Lord might use it. So that's ongoing conversation about loved ones. Another thing is story sharing, another way to open up your community group. And also, like, when you're hanging out with community group stuff, like having your relationship with your loved one, and or like if time with your family, if your family has non-believers, if time with your family really has on your mind, man, I'd love for Jesus to be at work here. And being able to talk about that as a group. Again, we're just like finding avenues to be able to support one another. And then again, group scattered. We mentioned earlier the like how we spend our time together, how we're sharing our life, that there's just that sort of intentional attention that we're giving to it. Any questions about how we do it, like group scattered, or any other ideas that you don't see listed there? Can you make a note to send out? We'll send out. There's a document, 99 questions, 99 wondering questions. Yeah, I bet Jordan Penley's. Yeah, Jordan Penley shares out of basically every human he meets. But yeah, we can send that out because it's also helpful in those sort of practical ways. And but I agree, in terms of that sort of story sharing, not only does it give you ideas for how do I do this, but I think it also gives you courage. Mm-hmm. Because you're like, oh man, this person I love, like, mm-hmm. they did it. I can do it too, type thing.
I know, to piggyback on that, mm-hmm. I know sometimes I had a conversation with a friend, and they said, you see this TV show? Oh, or this movie? Yeah, I did. Reminds me of a time that had made me think about the gospel and how that particular situation led me to Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think your own testimony, like even like sharing testimony inside group, is a real resource to having on our minds, like, yeah, Jesus saves people. Like, he might save people we love. But also, I think when you're thinking about how do we do evangelistic conversations, your own testimony is a real resource. And part of what we're talking about here is makes me think I should add it to my list. Not only do we, you know, in terms of like love one conversations, etc., but I think having conversations in group about, yeah, how do you do this? And not like, how do you get your perfect formula figured out for, like, what's your Romans Road explanation or anything? Like, it's like, not that. You're not working out your sales pitch. But in terms of, okay, yeah, but it can be intimidating for me not to have an idea of how I might get into this conversation. What would it look like for me to be prayerful? What would it look like for me to have some ideas about how to get into conversation? What would it look like for me to be, to make myself available to be hanging out with people, et cetera, et cetera? Like, having ideas shared in group can be really, like, affirming, encouraging, and break down some of the barriers that might exist to that. All right, let's keep moving. The next page is group gathered. So when we are together, how do we go about this gospel truth, gospel work stuff together? And, you know, serving together as a group, going to like Raleigh Rescue Mission and serving lunch, that sort of thing. You have full permission, go do it. But you'll notice back in the CG Leader role description, there's no requirement on that. Small groups, ministries, and other churches, the way that they fulfill this sort of thing is just by saying, okay, well, once a quarter, once a month, whatever, go serve somewhere, and then you're good. And what I don't want to do is have us as groups let that be in our minds the fulfillment of what it means for us to go there for and make disciples. Because again, it's good, like, yes, go serve lunch at a Raleigh Rescue Mission. It is a great way to love your neighbor. It, like, want to affirm that 100%. However, I do think that one of the, back to the, like, comfort tendency, one of the things that we have easy recourse to is we can do these sorts of service projects and we have eased our conscience. We have done our missional activity for however long. We'll do it again next quarter, right? And instead of that, what I would actually like for us to do is to be praying and gathering together and asking the Lord, God, what do you want us to do? How do you want us to be a blessing to maybe the neighborhood that we meet in, or maybe like the apartment complex right over there, or whatever that is, wherever that is? I think what I'd rather our groups do, as opposed to merely doing those service opportunities, which, yes, they're great, go do them. Instead of merely doing that, actually what I would like us to do is to be doing this sort of process together where we're asking the Lord to move. So there's a dumb acronym right here, ACT. Just to kind of break down a little bit of the process that I'm thinking through here. Which is to say that what we want to do is be in a prayerful, alert, receptive sort of state as a group and as individuals. And so just anticipate that the Lord is at work. So that quote in John 5, where Jesus says, "My Father is always working and I am always working." God is always at work around us. And so what we're not doing in this conversation is coming up with stuff to do. Like, God is always at work saving people. He's always at work providing for people, and he's going to use us to do it. And so part of what I think the way that we position ourselves is not merely, or should not be, we're going out there to just like save people or to fix broken things or something like that. I think that is how God uses us. However, God does not need us. I think what we need to anticipate is that God wants to work in our area. He is already at work. And we just need to ask God, would you use us? How do you want to use us? Make us available, open our eyes to be able to see it when it comes, that sort of thing. So we pray, anticipate prayer. And one thing, especially if you want to be reaching a neighborhood, one thing that's really helpful is prayer walks. So get your group together, walk around, pray, introduce yourself to people who are outside. Get to know like your neighbors type thing. You can also offer to pray for them. Like, hey, we're just walking around praying for the neighborhood. We really love our neighborhood. Anything you need prayer for? If people are like, no, I'm good, that's fine. Like, we're good. And that's the same sort of like, think of it like praying with your eyes open. It's like, man, I'm praying to the Lord that he would use us, and I'm alert. I'm just looking for like, where is God at work? Where do I see need? That sort of thing. And in anticipation, involving your existing community, whether that's in community group or outside of it, like maybe your neighbors don't come to your group, but you know them type thing, particularly if you're thinking through loving your neighborhood or loving a neighborhood close to you, anything like that, and just being alert. And then in that being alert, I think the next step is to just give something a shot. And so I have the word commit there because if you're anything like me, we exist in a culture that is very non-committal. And that could either be, man, I really just don't want to like this to take up a lot of my time because my time is like a real important commodity to me, or because we're afraid we're going to get it wrong. And so I think just at some point, you're going to be presented with a gospel bridge and you just cross it and you just pray and say, God, use it. And if I am hoping to like minister to, like there's a apartment complex right down the road from where my group meets where a lot of refugees live. And so look for an opportunity and say like, God, I don't know if you're gonna use us to really like serve these people, like if we're gonna get really any opportunity, but this right here, like bring somebody a meal or helping out with tutoring or whatever, like we can do that. I don't know necessarily what's gonna come, but we can do that. Let's go for it. And leading your group and saying, hey guys, this might work, this might we might fall flat on our faces, but it's okay because this isn't about us and it is about us getting it right. This is about God being at work among us. So find a bridge and cross it. Again, like as you're prayerfully considering like praying like, God, hey, I think this is something that you could use. We're going to give it a shot. Shut the door in our face if this is something you don't want us to do, or bless it if it's something you want us to do. Give it a shot. And then again, just the like, if you see a need, just try to fill it. Part of the involve your existing community, you'll notice there's this thing, meeting a need matrix. That is a handout. It's on the CG Leader website. Just go to more resources. It's there. It walks you through a process. It's kind of like a scoring system. So like, let's say you're like, man, that apartment complex right down the street, there are a bunch of refugee kids there, like maybe they need tutoring. I wonder if that would be really helpful. You can walk through the need matrix and it asks you things like, well, how close are you to that neighborhood? It's right down the street. It's not like on the other side of Raleigh. Like, okay, well that's good because we're actually going to have some relational sort of proximity. There are other questions in there like, who is already doing this work that you're interested in? And if you do a little bit of research, you might find out, oh, Refugee Hope Partners is already doing tutoring at that apartment complex with these kids. So I don't have to create anything new. Maybe we just go serve with them. Or maybe, well, they've already got tutoring covered. Maybe I should call them up and say, hey, what do you not have covered? So again, that like as you're involving your existing community and figuring out how am I going to be a part of that, it's participation. It's not we're going in and we're going to fix the situation and we're going to like come up with it all on our own or something. Like, no. What we're doing is we're just being members of our city. So anyways, that'll walk you through in the meeting and need matrix, and it'll tell you basically whether it's a good idea or not. And part of the reason, again, is that, like, hey, we're not here to be any sort of, like, evangelical saviors by any means. So Check out that handout. And then, so anticipate, commit, and then take heart. So just as things go, likely things will change. So let's say you get involved with tutoring, and then, man, I don't know if we can keep doing this. We started doing it once a month, but wow, this is tiring. Or everybody said they were interested, but then when like when it push came to shove, like it was actually really hard, etc. Things change. So celebrate easily as you're going through stuff. Maybe it's not like, you know, arrived, you haven't like started your own nonprofit yet or something, but like, hey, I got to have a really cool conversation with that family. Let's celebrate that. Celebrate easily. Hold fast to God in prayer. Just keep it in front of Him. And then as changes come up, you just navigate those changes and challenges as a community. And then again, just the stay present and faithful. Like, do whatever it is you feel like the Lord has called you to, and whatever that thing right in front of you is, to just do that. Okay, we don't necessarily know what the future is, and maybe it's like, man, I don't know how long we might get this opportunity. I don't know where this might go, but I've just got this one step, and this is what we're going to take. And then we've just got the next step, and that's what we're going to take. I've got an example of all of this, and then we'll stop so we can ask questions. But I think the example will help kind of put the pieces together. I had a friend who was a part of a small group at a church out in Tacoma, Washington. And so they were basically doing the same thing. Small group started up, and they were looking for opportunities to serve in their neighborhood. Everybody in the group lived in the same neighborhood, and the neighborhood had a high school. And one of the members of the groups worked at the high school. And so they were looking for opportunities, and they were doing actually the prayer walks where they were getting to know neighbors, praying for them, that sort of thing. But in talking to the group member who worked at the high school, one week she was like, hey, the football team needs people to bring dinner. So they did. They brought pizza for the high school football team and hung around. And they kept doing that. And they started to get to know some of the players. And then my friend, who is the community group leader, all of a sudden got asked to be the football team's chaplain, which in the Pacific Northwest is like, how did that happen? And so he did. And would pray for the team before the football games. And they're still bringing pizza every Friday. And they're starting to get to know some of the football players. And some of the group members start discipling some of the guys on the team. And two guys on the team came to know the Lord through that. They got baptized at the church. And then, like, they kept on doing this, serving in, with this football team, getting some other stuff. Like, some of the guys on the team, they found out that they were going home on the weekend to a house that didn't have a lot of food, so they're starting to just, like, send guys home with food. There was one family, I think, that, like, either got evicted, displaced, or they needed a place to stay. Like, the community group pitched in a bunch of stuff to get them, like, furniture for a new place, all this stuff. And then over time, as they were like discipling, tutoring, bringing pizza, like there was one woman who was helping run it. I think it was maybe the teacher who worked there. And she had to just say, hey, this is just too much. I'll tap out. And so brought it to the group. They figured out somebody else to run it. They were starting to build relationships with the family. And then I can't remember what, but there was a little bit of drama with like one or two of the parents. And so they kind of had to like put a little bit of boundaries in between, like, hey, we're primarily relating with the students, as opposed to, I can't remember if they got like asked for money or something like that. Anyways, it got sticky, and so they had to put in some boundaries and stuff. And then my friend eventually left that church, that community group, and I don't know what it's doing now. It could very well be still going on. They maybe have moved on to another opportunity. I don't know. But I do know that them being faithful to what it is that God put in front of them bore fruit. And so I think that's what we're talking about here. And I don't necessarily know that you're going to find a football team that needs pizza. And that's part of the trickiness of this process is what we can talk about is maybe how to go about this. But what we're looking for is contextualized ways for your group to reach the city. So I don't have the solution for you, and I don't even necessarily know where you should be looking. But I do think this is a sort of process that the Lord can use. So anyways, questions about the expectation here for groups? How do you go about this? Anything like that?
That's not exactly the question, but I do like to share a similar experience, if I can.
Sure.
Basically, we tried to plan for a service project at one, not every month, but like a quarter, once a quarter. Mm-hmm. Or, like, for example, we just got done, we combined the social with a service project.
Yep.
We had dinner together, and then we made cards, Valentine's Day cards for a nursing home right in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So that's an idea or two. Maybe you can, if you find the need for it, and find enough interest, you can mix a social with a service project, depending on what it is, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we recently did that, and now we're trying to work on another one for spring for one of the local schools here.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, and you make a really good point that you can plan those like two things simultaneously, and also when you're serving together, when you get this experience together, you also are building relationships. Like, so that whole process that I just described for my friend Brian's community group, we had something a little bit similar happen in our community group years ago. And it got down to where it wasn't the whole group that was running stuff with. We were helping a family that lived down the street. It wasn't the whole group that was doing it. It kind of came down to there were like three or four of us who were just helping organize stuff. And then other people would come to it, that sort of thing. And got really close to the people on that team. Yeah, anyways, it builds into relationships totally. Any other questions about how to go about this before we move on? Yeah, I think looking for points of contact, whether that's we have a lot of people in this one neighborhood or we don't, but our community group meets there. And so, like, we can be committed to that one. Or, well, our community group meets here, but there's this apartment complex right here. And also, like, I had a community group that they didn't live anywhere close to Sanderson High School, but they had a community group member who worked there. And so that's the Refugee Hope Partner tutoring happened at that high school. And so they just all started pitching it there. So I think, yeah, it really comes down to if you have a connection to it, it's just going to be a more robust, we're actually going to be serving, again, as members of the city that we live in, as opposed to, like, I think what we, the worst way for us to do this is for us to, like, be like, oh, the bad part of town over there, I'm going to go over there, I'm going to serve, and then I'm going to go home. It's like, I think that we should be serving and, like, doing whatever we're doing to, like, help our neighborhood. We should do that with people who we're going to run into while we're out for a walk or et cetera. But yeah, that having that connection point, I think, is important.
Going off the connection thing, I feel like one of the most successful service things our group has done is like when somebody will have a prayer request, like directly, like I remember somebody knew somebody whose mom was really sick and she had to keep flying back and forth to see her mom.
Yeah.
And we were like, all right, let's respond to that. And like,
yeah.
buy plane tickets.
Yep.
So like, it's more like, I guess, a one-off thing, but like, that's an easy way to like serve people. It's like,
absolutely. And that's the kind of thing where, like, you might not get any praise for it. Like, you might not even meet that person or something like that, you know? I think whatever you can do to instill that reflex that you just described, the, well, how can we help? Mm-hmm. Man, that, I think anything that we can do to instill that in ourselves and our people is amazing, whether or not it results in, you know, starting some nonprofit or something. Kaylee, did you have one? Okay, cool. That's great. You go.
I just like what you had to say about if you find a gospel bridge, just cross it. Just try it.
Yeah.
And I think just being okay to fail.
Yeah.
And I think I've been a part of groups and things where I don't know, you're trying to beam it out.
Yeah.
You're just going to talk about the thing, talk about the thing.
Yes.
And you're trying to like almost like manifest some fruit.
Yeah. Or you might not get to see it.
Or you may never get to see it. I think, like you may not be the one that gets to harvest the fruit.
Absolutely. So absolutely.
So it's just that, like you said, do the right thing in front of you. That one step, like that's faithfulness. Like, mm-hmm. That's a win. Like that's the goal. So I don't know. Like, that was encouraging here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Anybody else, the like, I need to have everything planned out to a T before I do anything? That's me. If you're the like, I just like jump in with both feet, then you're already good. Your group might slow you down a little bit, but on the whole, particularly like committees are almost always slow in making decisions. That's kind of how it is with community groups. Like, yeah, we just do all this like, you know, gay planning, or what are we? It's like, let's just try something, and you have to encourage your people. Let's just give it a shot. Cool. Let's talk a little bit about leadership development. And this is really briefly, really brief, and it's not like I'm not telling you how to make leaders. There's so many books written on leadership development and what it means to be a leader. Like, that's not what we're talking about right now. But we're going to talk about empowering people in your group to be able to help with the life of the group. And then I'm going to give you just this little like training quadrant that can be helpful, particularly when you're training up a new leader. I think you as a leader, back to this, like, you're the champion. You do not have to do everything. And so empowering and or delegating is just your best recourse to not have to do everything. And so delegating, I mean, that's, you're just telling somebody to do something, or you're asking somebody to do something. That's not even necessarily related to like, oh, you see that somebody else has like leadership potential, anything like if it's just, hey, would somebody be willing to help manage the schedule of who's cooking each week? You know, that could be something where you're like, hey, you are super duper like organized. I know you keep a really good calendar. Can you run them with that? But it also might be like, hey, you just gotta remember to send a text once a week. Can anybody do that? That sort of thing. So you could just be delegating, or particularly when you're thinking about things like socials, hosting, hospitality gifts, or discipleship gifts, that sort of thing. Almost always, people have some gift to be able to serve people with, or they're really like, they're just outwardly really good at something. Almost always, it will take a conversation to actually prompt people to use that, either in the life of your group or in the life of the church. So being able to say, hey, man, you are just so hospitable. You're so good at hosting people. Could our group just meet at your house and y'all could be the host? Or, hey, you love putting on events with people, like, could you plan the social type thing? So some of this has to do with you as a leader understanding your people, understanding who the like really structured person is, or understanding who the like really hospitable person is, and saying, hey, I have an idea for how you could serve the life of our group or serve in another capacity with that. Would you consider doing that? And I mean, depending on who it is and their availability, usually when it comes to community group, what you're asking them to pick up is not that big of a thing outside of facilitating a discussion and hosting. You know, if it's things like, hey, just you know, you want to plan a social, and you don't even, like, you're not officially, I mentioned this the other week, I'm not making you the party planning committee. Would you just plan one thing for us? That's all I'm talking about. And then see where it goes. Outside of hosting and discussion, like, hosting is a big deal because, like, you got to clean your house, you know, every week. And, like, it, depending on who you are, it can feel like a big deal to have a bunch of people in your house. So those are the two things where, you know, you're being sensitive to what you're asking people to do. But for the most part, I think that when you recognize gifting in somebody and you present them with the, like, hey, well, what would it look like for you to serve people out of that, like, that usually bears some sort of fruit, but almost always takes that conversation before it's going to happen. Particularly when it comes to, if you think somebody in your group would be an awesome community group leader, almost always it will take a conversation of, hey, man, I see leadership in you. Would you consider going to the training? I mentioned week one, I'll train anybody. And so one of the ways, we'll talk about multiplying in just a minute, one of the ways to go ahead and be prepared for multiplying is just to send people in your group to the training, so that people know what it is that we're trying to do in group. They can serve you as like a co-leader or sub-leader of some kind or something, but it just goes ahead and it gets it on their radar. In terms of that, like, empowerment, I already just described this, that inquiring, inviting, respecting, to where you might even be asking people, like, hey, what are you really passionate about? Like, what has the Lord laid on your heart? Inviting them to serve in a regard. But also, if they say, no, I'm good, respecting that. I'm just saying, okay, cool, yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to ask. Send people to the CU leader training. And in terms of training up a new leader, I don't think that if there's somebody in your group, you're like, man, you would be a great community group leader. I'm not trying to like kick you out. I really like that you're in group. I actually might even be a little bit sad if you left my group because I like hanging out with you so much. But man, I think you'd be a really good community group leader. Why don't you go to the training and just like see what the Lord lays on your heart? And maybe that person sticks in your group for forever, but maybe they also plan a new group. You invite them into the training, but also that's not the sum total of what I think it means for you to affirm leadership capabilities in somebody and like give them opportunities to serve in that. So it's not just merely you send them to Eric and Eric gets it all figured out. I think what you do in community group is you offer them ways to serve. And that could be like facilitating discussion, that could be like hosting or whatever. So this training quadrant is incredibly simplistic. And it's a way that you can think through how you might train up a new leader in terms of facilitating discussion. And this might be somebody who isn't going to plant their own group, but they are maybe going to get into the discussion rotation. That's another thing in terms of being the champion of facilitating discussion, right? That like, again, you don't have to do it every week. You can train up somebody in your group to take discussion once a month, once every 6 weeks, something like that. Like, you have the freedom to do that, okay? So as you're trying to get somebody in the mix or training somebody on what it might mean to facilitate discussion, you just think through it, through these four. I do, we talk, I do, we talk, you do, and you do. And what you're doing is you're just moving in this circuit. So they're already in your community group. They've already seen you do discussion. Okay, so you're already at that quadrant. But then if you're like, hey, I just think I'd love to hear you facilitate discussion sometime. Touch base with them 1 week and just let them in on how you prep. Show them where you get the guides, show them how you like edit it, tweak it, you read the intro, what else do you look at, that sort of thing. You just let them in on the conversation of what it is we're trying to do in group, and they walk with you through your prep. But then you still do it. So they get to see behind the curtain, and then they watch you facilitate discussion so they can start connecting the dots. And then the next step is to do that same thing. We talk, but I watch you prep, and we talk through it. And then you do it, and then afterwards, yeah, I'll give you feedback or something. There's no, strictly speaking, number of weeks. This isn't necessarily 4 weeks or something like that. I think it just depends on the person. If like they've led other groups before, like they basically got everything they need, but maybe you know a couple like specifics about how Vintage does it compared to how they used to do it in Crew or whatever. This might go really quickly, or you might have somebody in a group where they're like, man, I've never facilitated discussion before, like in like a Bible study, but I like have other people skills to bring to the table. So I might let you in on prep for a number of weeks, but like you might blow it out of the water. Like you might do a good job, or you might take a little longer to figure out how to exactly to do this, whatever that is. Take as many weeks as you feel like it will take for that person to be able to do it without you. So the last step is they do the prep with you not there, and they facilitate discussion, likely with you in attendance, but also maybe not. And after that, like, I think they're good to go. You can get them in on the mix for discussion. Any questions about like empowering, raising up leaders, or walking somebody through those quadrants for getting in the mix for facilitating? Cool. Last thing really quickly is just how do we multiply groups? Two ways. One of them is we plan out of existing groups, and the other is that groups happen spontaneously, which is to say that, and that's the rare one, but like Jordan Brzezinski just started a spontaneous group, basically. So it happens every once in a while, where you're not necessarily planting out of a group, or you're not necessarily taking people from an existing group to start a new group, but you're maybe like gathering people from a specific area or something to start a group. So in both of them, the process is relatively the same. It's like we've already talked about with the looking for gospel opportunities. You pray and you ask the Lord, God, what is it that you want me to do? And then if you feel like the Lord's calling you to start a group, then if you're in a group, that's when you bring it up with your existing leaders first, okay? Have a conversation with them before you like bring it up to the whole group so that they aren't surprised. And that way y'all can discuss it a little bit, game plan it a little bit. Because you're already here, for folks who are in existing groups, like you are already recommended to the training, right? So it's not as if it would be a total surprise to them. But as you discuss it with the leader, not only like, yes, does that help you game plan, but it also helps y'all open up to praying through what is it that God is planning to do with the life of your group, because there is a sense to which planting is disruptive. That's not to say that it's bad, but it does just change things, especially if you take people with you. And so just praying and asking the Lord to be at work through that. And then if it seems clear to y'all, yes, I think this is a good time in the life of the group, I think this is time for us to do this, usually you want 2 to 3 months of a timeline to be able to announce it to the group, say, okay, guys, what we're going to do is we're going to work on planting, and you know, whatever that date is, 2 to 3 months from now, that's when we're going to plant this new group. And so that gives everybody enough time to be able to process, consider if they're going to go with the plant or not. But also, some people will be like, cool, good to go. Other people would be like, but you're my friends. Like, there is some process of grieving in that. And so that's why you don't want it to take forever, but you do need to go about it just a little bit slowly to make sure that it's a healthy move for everybody in the group. And then I've got just this one point about, so as you're doing that planning, like you set a start date, figure out where you're gonna meet, kind of all those logistics type stuff. And some of that will happen in conversations with people in the group. Like, hey, are you coming with the plant? Could we meet at your home or something like that? But sometimes we think about planting as like, okay, well, we've got 20 people in the room, so let's just split them right down the middle. Take 10 over here, 10 over here. And honestly, that does not necessarily work as well as taking a smaller group of people from a group and planting with that group. It gives that group a little bit more of an opportunity to create its own life. And leads to, in some respects, the least disruption over here. That makes sense. So sometimes you get really, really big groups, and the healthiest way to plant out of them does not super relieve the, if you've got 30 people on the roster, you're not necessarily going to take 15 with you. However, it is honestly the healthiest decision for the group that's going to get planted out of it. And as you're discussing in group, like, you bring it up to the group, initially, hey guys, this is what we think is next for the life of our group. Let's all just like be praying through this together. And then over those 2 to 3 months, I think you can have conversations with the group about things like, hey guys, we're not picking teams here. You're not picking who you like most. And I think part of what you in planting a group will need to commit to the people in your group is, I'm promising you, I will not be offended if you don't come with me. And I think that you as leaders, you have to be willing to make that promise so that there's no weird relational pressure. People don't feel like, hey, I can't be honest about the fact that I want to stay or I want to go, or we got to relieve that pressure. So say, hey, I promise you, my promise to you is that I will not be offended. If you want to come, love to have you. If you don't want to come, that's fine. And what we have to do in that planting process is make sure that we're taking all the drama out of it, because it can just get choosy really quickly. And that's what maybe some of those discussions might look like over the course of those 2 to 3 months. And you might have to do a little bit of one-on-one follow-up. People might not feel comfortable in the big group saying, hey, I actually want to come with you, because they might feel like it's somehow a saying something negative about the current leader, that sort of thing. So it might take some one-on-ones. But you figure out who your core team is. You start your figure out when your start date is. And then you'll notice on the CG Leader page, on the discussion page up at the top there, planting discussions, there are 4 weeks worth of discussion guides that are based on this content. Why are we doing this? How do we know the gospel? How do we live the gospel? How do we advance the gospel? So what you do is the first 4 weeks of your group, we treat it as a closed group. So we're not going to send any new people to you. You got your core team. And so for those 4 weeks, you can do those 4 planting discussions, and that helps you as a core team figure out what is it that we're doing here, and let's all get on the same page in terms of like what we want to see the Lord do. So you do that the first 4 weeks, and then after that, then you open up and your community group, just like all the other groups on the map down there. If you're a spontaneous plant, it's a little bit different because you're kind of like looking for people more as opposed to taking people with you, but otherwise it's the exact same. Any questions about the planting process? I already mentioned that at the end of the training, we follow with everybody individually just to see like, hey, what's next for you? And so in terms of what you might be thinking about planting or something, like we figure all that. It's all kind of case by case. Everybody's got a different situation. But in terms of the process, any questions?
How many people do you recommend as your team?
That's a good question. Right there I have 5 as the example. I think you can have as little as 5 to 6, and it's perfectly fine. It creates a pretty intimate environment, and it's great for like getting to know, you know, your core team members. I think 3 is probably too little. You can make it work, but especially if you've got 2 leaders, you know, but anyways, yeah. Yeah, I think it can be smaller than you think, but not tiny. Cool. I think we're just a little bit over time, but are we? Or is that clock up there wrong? 2:06. Yeah, we are over time. I did talk too much. Yeah. Right. It's always right. But really quickly, last week we talked about like, hey, coming with any remaining questions, any hanging things that like we have not talked about in the training that you want to have covered. So open floor, literally anything before we get out of here. Can Abe lead discussion? Yes, he can. If that's your question, yes, he can. Yeah. Feel free to stick around afterwards if you do have anything, or if anything comes up, you can always email me. Like I said, we'll be following up with everybody individually, and we give just a little bit of time between the end of the training and when we do that, so you hear from us in like 1 to 2 weeks, and that's just intended to give you a little bit of space once you're done with the training, think and pray, and then go from there. So you'll hear from us, but it's been a real pleasure to have this group in these 4 weeks of training. I think I mentioned in my email or something, I love these opportunities just to be able to get to know folks, talk about things that are really important, I think, especially for the life of the church, but also like really do hope that some of the stuff we talked about empowers y'all to be able to make much of Jesus and pour into the life of the church. Do you have a question?
One quick one.
Yeah.
What if you feel that as a leader, okay, I set this group up, and then first couple of weeks, hey, everyone's what's coming. And then after the first couple of weeks, even a couple of months, after the next couple of months, people will just stop coming, start leaving them down, the group just stop running down.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that as a leader?
Yeah. So we talked about coaches. I think having a conversation with your coach would be really helpful. And I think almost always, it's almost a little bit informed out of the content we looked at last week with managing conflict. Almost always, if there's a problem in the group that you're experiencing, having a conversation with somebody one-on-one in group, hey, do you experience this too? Like, do you feel like people just aren't as engaged anymore? And getting a little bit of a side conversation with somebody, but then having a conversation as a group. Just like, hey guys, we just haven't really seen people or feel like engagement is low. Does anybody feel like that? What do we think might be causing that? Like, do we need to change meeting time, et cetera, that sort of thing. But yeah, I think just a conversation about it is probably the best recourse, and your coach can be helpful for that. Yeah. Let me pray for y'all, and then we'll get out of here. Father, thank you for these leaders. Like I said, it's been a privilege to be with them, and pray that you would be at work in their lives. When it comes to community groups, yes, but also just in general, you have called them into the world. You place them in workplaces and neighborhoods and friend groups and families. You have already put them out to do your work. And just pray your blessing on them in terms of reaching their neighbors, in terms of loving their neighbors. Father, you will use them, and pray that you would. Pray that you would be with them as, you know, we consider kind of plans for community groups, who you're calling to plant, all that stuff. Thank you that you gifted all these people, that they've been in the training, and pray that you would make it really clear to them. Thanks for your goodness to us, Father. Jesus, in your name we pray. Amen. Cool.